Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Coach Conversations. I'm Catherine Halpin, and it's my pleasure to host this Blog Talk Radio show. Coach Conversations is sponsored by the ICF Phoenix, produced by Anna Melikan, PhD, ACC, and a Book Yourself Solid Elite Certified Coach, and hosted by me, Catherine Halpin, MCC. You can visit our show page at blogtalkradio.com/ICF Phoenix, and then you can find links to our websites. If you're listening to the show live and have a computer nearby, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/ICF Phoenix. You'll find a post on this show, and we're going to use this Facebook space as a virtual chat room during our show today. If you have comments, questions, or insights, please write them there. Even if you're listening to the recording of the show, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/ICF Phoenix. We would love to hear from you. For this show, we have a special sponsor, Accomplishment Coaching. Looking for a great ICF-accredited coach training program run by some of the best certified coaches in the business? Look no further than Accomplishment Coaching. Accomplishment Coaching's transformative 12-month program will take you to new heights in your personal, business, and spiritual life, and will teach you how to get paid while you're doing it. Its coaches are highly compensated for their work once they finish their training. So whether you're aspiring to enter coaching as a new life phase or you need the support of an accredited coach training program, consider Accomplishment Coaching for your training. Accomplishment Coaching offering you the world's finest curriculum, bar none. An extraordinary statement by an extraordinary organization. Accomplishment Coaching, your life by design. For more information, visit accomplishmentcoaching.com. And our guest today is Silva Leduc. Silva, or Sil, as many people call her, has been a change agent in the lives of thousands of people for nearly two decades, and I really do mean thousands. For the past 20 years, she has been an executive coach, consultant, trainer, and workshop facilitator for leaders in small businesses, nonprofits, and all types of large organizations, including Fortune 10 companies. She's also in the faculty of the College of Executive Coaching, where she teaches psychologists and other graduate-level professionals how to become an effective executive coach. What a lot of people don't know is that Silva was the co-founder of the Client Compass software. For many years, Client Compass was the premier software used by thousands of ICF coaches around the world to manage their business. Her company was bought out by John Wiley & Sons, the book publishing house, in 2005, and she happily returned full-time to her coaching business, Sage Leaders. Silva has been the recipient of the ICF's Prism Award twice. The first time she and one of her clients received the award was in 2006 when she still lived in Seattle, and the second time was in 2012. That's when Sil and another of her clients, Leading Age Arizona, received the Prism Award from the Phoenix chapter of the ICF. This year, Silva is the president of the Phoenix chapter of the ICF. Please join me in welcoming Sil.
Well, thank you, Catherine. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, we are so happy to be here with you today. You've been such a great leader at all levels of ICF for so long, and we're especially, Anna and I are especially happy to be here with you today because we understand it is your birthday. So happy birthday.
Oh, you weren't supposed to tell anybody. Thank you.
No, you're worth celebrating, my friend. We want to celebrate and honor you today. And thank you for making time on your birthday to share your wisdom with our listeners all over the world. We are so pleased that we've been getting routinely about 4,000 listeners to our Blog Talk Radio show over the past year or so. And most of those listeners do join us offline after the fact. But if you're listening live and you'd like to call in, that number is 424-243-9638. And as you hear Sil tell her story, I know you're going to have questions and comments you'd like to go deeper on. So feel free to join us by calling in, 424-243-9638. So, Syl, I always like to start at the very beginning. I think it gives us great data about people to know where they grew up. So where were you born? Where'd you grow up? Tell us that story.
Okay. So I don't know if anybody can hear the Canadian accent or not. I was born in a very small town in Canada. It's called Trail, BC. It's about, It's about 7 miles from the border, just north of Spokane. And grew up in this town of, I don't think it ever exceeded 10,000 individuals. And I just could not wait to leave that little tiny town and move to a metropolis. Didn't know if it was going to be Vancouver or Calgary. It ended up being Calgary. And I was there for, oh gosh, probably 15 years. I have two degrees, from the University of Calgary. And they're in psychology, educational psychology. I worked with the Alberta government for about 4 years. And the program that I worked with, I find this fascinating. It was a department within the Alberta government that provided career services for everybody who is an adult in Alberta. And Alberta is very oil rich. No charge for anything. So all the services were completely free of charge.
Wow.
Now, workshops, and at that point it was called counseling. So counseling, short-term workshops, career decision-making workshops, programs that were some only a half day long, and one of the programs was 21 hours and spread over 3 weeks. So that was almost my introduction to coaching, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. So after being with that organization, I was recruited away to work with a consulting firm, and we did organizational effectiveness and career management, i.e. called outplacement, in a company in Canada, in Calgary, and then in Victoria. And then I ended up being transferred with the same company to Seattle.
Oh, how
wonderful. And
then
from Seattle, I just migrated. I'm the kind of person that chooses their life and their career based on climate. So it was a little too cold and wet in BC, very cold in Calgary, in Victoria, and in Seattle, way too wet. And so now I'm living in Phoenix.
Oh, well, we're so happy that you landed here. Now, how long have you been in Phoenix? I know I've known you for, I think, a decade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you and I met in 2001 or 2 at the Executive Coaching Summit, and I moved.
Yeah.
It was that long ago.
Yeah.
We've known each other for a long time.
A long time.
And then moved here in 2006.
Yes, okay. That makes good sense. I just knew I had seemed like I'd known you forever. So thanks for reminding me. Well, we were so lucky to get you in our community here in Phoenix and in our coaching community. We're so happy that you landed here. And I would think that experience with the government and then the consulting firm was just extraordinarily valuable in helping you prepare for coaching, even though we weren't calling it coaching back then. I would think that was just extraordinarily rich experience.
It was, and one of my colleagues, when I was with the consulting firm in Calgary, she and I actually put together I was trying to remember when this was, 1992 or 93, somewhere around that time, we put together a program for managers in oil companies, and one of the components was manager as coach. And that was based on the work, and Beverly Kay had been working within the career realm for such a long time. And she was talking about coaching back then, so we started utilizing that language way back then.
And
when I was in Victoria, this I find absolutely fascinating, all the serendipity. I was in Victoria, and I was writing for a magazine, and so I was writing the careers column for the magazine. And I interviewed a woman, and I can't recall her name or full name. I think it was Millie something. And anyway, she had been in New York, and she'd lived there for a number of years. She had moved to Victoria, and she told me that she was the coach to Christopher Reeve prior to his accident. So she was one of those originating coaches from that New York group of actors.
Wow.
Isn't that fascinating?
That is fascinating. I've known
well,
lots
she was,
of people that came
oh, go
out
ahead,
of that
sorry.
Group. Well, I just was going to say I've known lots of people that came out of the early, early group of people that got hooked up with Thomas Leonard and really helped develop Coach U's curriculum. And, wow, that was fascinating that you got to meet Millie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a pivotal experience, I would imagine.
It really was pivotal because at that stage, as she was talking, I said, "Well, this is what I do. This is the kind of work that I do. I don't act as a consultant who tells people. I act as a consultant who asks questions." Mm. And so it was absolutely pivotal. Thanks for bringing that up because it was definitely a turning point for me because then I started saying, you know, I am coaching. And the
right.
company that I was with, we were doing 360 assessments back then.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is going back to the early 90s.
Yes. And I would think 360s were relatively cutting edge at that point. I don't honestly remember, but I would imagine that they were.
And they were being used by a variety of organizations, both instrument-based as well as the interviews. And so the company that I was with, and it was called Mainstream Access, we actually developed a software program that would do 360s. And I still always preferred to use the interview-based as well, not using one or the other, but actually used to use both of them together.
I love that. I love that. I think you can always get people to open up more if you can sit in front of them. And just, I say my genius is being able to get people to tell me stuff they should not tell me. And they'll often say, I don't know why I'm telling you this, and then they'll just keep talking. It's the power of getting in front of them and helping them feel comfortable. Well, say more about the organizational effectiveness work you did at that time. I heard you say right-sizing and outplacement, I think. So say more about all of that, because if you don't come from that background, that can be foreign. And I think our listeners would appreciate knowing, you know, kind of some of the ins and outs of that whole model.
Okay. So I said my degree is in educational psychology. And a lot of people would say, does that mean that I'd worked in schools or high schools and working with families, working with kids? And I said, no, the work that I do is in career development and leadership development and helping individuals recognize how to, you know, be their best, how leaders can be effective as leaders, how they can help propel people forward, how to motivate them. So the company, again, Mainstream Access, it no longer exists. In the U.S., it was bought out by Right Management Canada.
Sure.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
Right Management Canada in the U.S., it was another organization.
Okay.
So when I was there, and the company existed for just, I think, about 10 years, we had the exclusive contract in Canada with Bill Bridges, William Bridges, who is renowned for transition management.
Yes, of course, of course. I love his work.
Oh, he's just a marvelous person as well. He's so so humble and so amazingly brilliant when looking at the whole concept of is it change or is it transition? And the transition is the emotional impact before, during, and after the event, i.e. change, takes place. So we have this contract with him. We go into organizations before they were going through a downsizing or a right-sizing. We would then go in afterwards to help heal the wounds, essentially. So
yeah.
Helping people recognize that it wasn't their fault, helping leaders and managers to recognize that sometimes things take place, and helping them get back on track. So increasing motivation, increasing productivity by helping them go through the transition process and develop their new beginnings.
Wow.
Which is just amazing work.
I can only imagine, and that's that's probably how you got into the Fortune 10 organizations, because they were, those great big companies were doing that sort of thing all the time.
Yes.
In the 90s, weren't they?
They were, and I was recruited away again after moving to Seattle by Ernst & Young, and so I was brought in as an executive coach with Ernst & Young, And for people that are on the call, E&Y is a management consulting firm. They also have the tax and audit arm. So I was part of the consulting arm, and I would work on the major changes that these Fortune 100, 50, and 10 organizations would go through. So sometimes the work would be related to communications and how to effectively communicate. Sometimes there were training elements involved. And then I would work with the leaders in a coaching capacity. And there was actually even one engagement where I was an embedded coach. And
oh,
what
wow.
that meant was, yeah, it was just fascinating. I've never heard of this happening before. It was all just, again, serendipity.
Mm-hmm.
I was working with a large utility, and there was a process to help them go through reducing costs. And as part of the work, I was working with individuals on a team, and then I ended up staying with a particular team for 6 months
mm-hmm.
and was there, you know, day and night. So essentially,
wow.
I would fly from Seattle down to California to this location, and I would stay with the team the entire time. So it
wow.
was just, it was an incredible experience to see the changes that they went through, to watch them go through the changes successfully and effectively, how they came together, the growth period that the individuals went through, as well as the leader I was working with.
Wow.
So that was that's another pivotal moment.
Oh, my gosh, that's fascinating. So say more about that. Now, so you were on site a week at a time, every week, and you were
mm-hmm.
coaching the leader and key members probably individually, right?
Yes.
And then were you also facilitating their meetings, or what other services did you provide as that kind of embedded coach?
It would be facilitating some meetings. So
uh-huh.
Some of it, of the deliverables, going back to consulting language, would be
uh-huh.
to facilitate a meeting or to do through a training process or program, put together
sure.
work plans, manage the workflow, and then be the fly in the wall, essentially. So the individual I worked with, I would sometimes just stand at the back of the room. We'd practice in advance what was going to be said, how it's going to be said, what some of the challenges might be to anticipate, how to communicate effectively, and then I would stand at the back of the room and give hand signals.
Oh, I
so
love
it. So it was again, coaching in the moment, being
in
embedded
the moment.
Coach.
Right.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
I can't. I think that was just an extraordinary opportunity for you, because you've got so much coach experience and you had so much time with your clients every week.
Mm-hmm.
The question I would have would be, did you find yourself becoming a member of that team, or how did you retain that professional boundary?
That is such an excellent question. It was always important to address, and we did talk about it, not going native. And what that meant was not becoming so involved in the team and enmeshed that one could not be neutral any longer and therefore
yeah.
lose effectiveness.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an excellent question.
Yeah.
So that was something we talked about. And at about that six-month mark, I said, you know, I don't know if I'm nearly as effective because I'm regarded as a team member.
Right. You've bonded with everybody so deeply, probably.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So is that why you stepped out after 6 months, or did you just feel like the work was complete? Or
Both. And the third uh-huh. was living the life of a road warrior really is not glamorous
no.
for a lot of people. Some people love being on the road. I'm not one of those individuals.
No. It's so hard. So hard. That's why I love coaching, because I can do so much of my work over the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that was an extraordinary experience, and I'm so happy that you've been able to share that. And it might prompt some questions on our Facebook page or our dial in. That number again is 424-243-9638. And even though you were an employee at that time of Ernst & Young, I'm sure that was an extraordinarily lucrative engagement for them because of the amount of time you were devoting to that client. So it's a great role model for coaches today.
Especially for internal coaches to recognize the value that they're providing. if it was necessary for an organization to bring in an external coach, there's the ROI right there by having this person as an internal employee.
Yes. Well, say more about what did you do on a daily basis to keep those to not go native, because I think that's a question I have and all of us have that have been. If you're a coach, then you're just naturally great at bonding with your clients, and so then when you're with them that amount of time, I think it would have been very difficult. I would have thought it might maybe have been impossible for me. So I'm just fascinated about what kind of self-care or what kind of discipline did you have to maintain to keep those boundaries?
Well, that's another good question. So let me just think about that for a moment. When one is a consultant, it's not unusual to be at a client location for weeks or sometimes months.
Right,
and
sure.
And so I think that was part of the training that would take place. And I just want to
that
add in a bit of an aside, is that sometimes I'd get feedback from the other consultants I worked with, and they'd say, well, how come you're asking so many questions instead of telling so much?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I try and help them to understand the difference between being a pure coach or a pure consultant. And I have I do the blend between the two. It's a consultative coaching model. So it was important to be reflective and be able to stand back and say, how am I coming into this engagement? How am I coming in and showing up as an individual? Am I retaining my neutrality? Am I forming alliances? Am I being effective? So the people that I worked with, we would talk about it with each other, about are we becoming too involved or too enmeshed even. It's much like being a therapist, being too enmeshed with one's patient.
Right,
is it being too enmeshed with a client?
Right.
So we were cognizant, and even if an individual is very aware, I think over a period of time that the coach or consultant loses their effectiveness if they're involved for too long of a period. And when I'm working with clients now as a coach, not as a consultant, if there's an engagement that goes on for a long period, have I created dependency? So enmeshment is one thing. Dependency is another, such that the coach or consultant makes him or herself necessary.
Right.
Beyond necessity.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And it's not productive at that point.
No.
Not
productive, not healthy.
Yes, not appropriate. Yes. Yes. Well, so let's pick up when you left that consulting coaching gig in California. You were still based in Seattle, and you went back to Seattle. Did you stay with Ernst & Young for a while longer, or was that when you moved?
For a little bit longer. I was being recruited by the organization to work in the tax and audit group as an internal coach, internal executive coach. And there was a call that came out to have someone go back down to California to work with a large technology firm. And I received a call from a partner in California and said, can you come down? And I said, well, how long would this engagement be? I'm being recruited. And it was, well, we're not sure. It could just be, you know, 3 or 4 weeks or maybe 3 or 4 months. And then I thought, oh, and it could be longer than that. So
right.
I made the decision. It was time to leave. And
uh-huh.
I talked with the partner that I reported to and let her know that I really didn't want to be on the road like that anymore, and so I tendered my resignation and opened up my company quickly. Actually,
I
it was a little tiny spot in between, very tiny spot. I left, and I worked with another consulting firm for less than 2 months, and I was the director of coaching services, and that's where I met Linda Miller.
I love this story. I love this
and
story.
I was,
so say more about that.
Well, I was looking to bring a coach in to provide a certification program for the organization, a small firm, to provide a certification program. You know, and sometimes it's much better to have someone external come in rather than be the internal person. There's more credibility and more sustainability. So I met Linda, and we just became fast friends.
Uh-huh. I love that story.
And
That's
then she
so
moved
great.
To Arizona.
Yes. Yes. I met Linda at the very first coaching conference before there was an ICF in 1996. Marcia Reynolds and I were sharing a room in DoubleTree in Houston, and she said to me, "Come with me. We're going to someone's room, and we're going to get on their laptop, and we're going to be able to check our email."
Ooh,
it was just like, you know, the Jetsons. We couldn't even imagine being able to check our email on the road. And it was Linda Miller, and we went to her hotel room, and we used her laptop, and we became fast friends, and we've stayed good friends. She's such a wonderful person in our community. So that's a great story. Now, where did you end up getting your coach training, given that you've been doing coaching for decades? Did you go through formal coach training?
I did. I went through the College of Executive Coaching.
Okay.
So when I went out on my own in 2000, I was saying, well, I don't need to have any coach training. I've been doing this for so long. I've been developing the programs. I've delivered them. I've taught at the university level, all of that. And I thought, oh, I'm just not going to do this. And a client in an organization, a healthcare company, she was the senior VP of HR. I was doing work there, and she said, well, if you want to stay, you need to have ICF certification. And I said, okay, that's fine. So I'm going to find the organization that recognizes the experience that I have already. So I hearkened upon College of Executive Coaching because it was designed for people that have graduate degrees already, and the majority of the individuals had degrees in psychology. So went through the program, and I did a fast track. So I finished in less than a year. I think it was about 8 months. So I essentially said, okay, this is my new graduate degree. I'm going to spend all my time doing this.
Oh, that was cool. And you just pushed through it.
I did.
And then when did you become a faculty member?
Within
a
few months. It was. The first program I was involved in, the way that the CEC works is there's a one-week intensive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 5 or 7 days long, and living in Seattle, you know, cold and rainy, and it was being offered in the Santa Barbara area, and I thought, oh, what a wonderful place to go for a whole week.
Right.
So that was the starting point, and as I was going through the program, I approached the president and founder. His name is Dr. Jeff Auerbach, and I said, Jeff, you know, I've been teaching these programs elsewhere. I've come into this program because of the quality of the program, because of the individuals, and I want to be on the faculty. And he said, okay, well, once you finish, then come back to me, and we'll talk. So I believe it was either the latter part of 2002, or 2001, or the beginning of 2002.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very, very cool. I love that story. And I'm sure that you did have a wealth of experience to bring to his curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've enjoyed the programs. I teach one on executive coaching, what you need to know, on measurements, test and measurement, what assessments to use. There's other ones that I've come in and co-taught with him. And then I'm also doing a program that's a telephone-based one, and it's niche marketing. So I use my experience of having worked in business, having formed businesses, using technology, so helping people recognize what they need to do to develop their niche, as well as their business plan, develop their website, use social media, you know, all the work that Anna does so well. So working with folks to be able to do that, so they're not coming out saying, well, oh my gosh, here I am as a new coach and I have no idea what to do. It's preparing them for the business side, not just the art and science of coaching, it's the science of business.
Yes, 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 and I love that. Our sponsor said that too. That you just have to be able to. It's a critical piece of your coach training. You have to be able to get clients. If you can't get clients, it's not a viable profession.
Exactly. Otherwise, it's a hobby, then, isn't it?
It's a hobby, right? So we have to be able to get those clients. So I'd be fascinated to know more about how do you help people identify what their niche is.
You know, that is such an interesting question to ask, because sometimes when I'm working with folks, they'll talk with me about their passion and about what it is that they want to do. And it may sound callous, and I'm not being callous when I throw this question back to them. It's, is it a passion that someone wants to pay for? And is it a passion where you're able to actually find the individual so you can let them know about the great work that you do? Because one can be passionate, but if there's not a market, again, that goes back to being possibly an expensive hobby. So being able to tap into an area, whether it's a niche or an area of focus, where there is pain or problem, that we as coaches can help people work through that, is, I think, is absolutely mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
So spending time to look at what one wants to do, is effective at, and that comes with ease,
mm-hmm.
and then tapping that back into, and who are the people that can be, that need that assistance.
Yes. So really going through a process to identify the answers to all four of those sets of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Very cool.
And there are a couple of books that I recommend that people read. One is called Best Year Yet, and that was written by Ginny Ditzler. And while it sounds as though it's more for personal reflection, it can be used for business as well. And then the other book is called The One-Page Business Plan by Jim Horan. And Horan is spelled H-O-R-A-N. And that one is also designed to help people / organizations figure out what their business is, what the plan is, and then what to do about it. So between those two books, I find that they're very good grounding for coaches to use to help them get to the basis of who am I, what do I offer, and who needs my help.
Excellent, excellent. So just a note to our listeners, if you're a new coach, this is critically information. You're going to want, you want to, you know, back up on the tape and listen to this again, because this is such important information to be able to help you get your business perspective in order around your coaching practice.
Mm-hmm.
Without the clients, then there's no revenue. Without the revenue, like you said, it's just a hobby. It's a wonderful hobby. It's an energizing, life-giving hobby, but it's just a hobby.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, Syl, tell us a little bit about some of your biggest coaching successes. I'm sure there have been innumerable successes, but think of just one or two that have been really meaningful to you. I know our listeners would appreciate hearing that.
And I was afraid you're going to ask me that question. Because I'm thinking, how do I narrow it down? And it's not my successes. It's the client successes. That I was wondering if you're going to ask that question. And then I stood back and thought, well, what are the successes that have really left an indelible mark in my mind for the people I've worked with?
Mm-hmm. Great way to put it.
Some of the individuals initially that I worked with, I was doing remediation coaching. So for those that don't know what that means, it's the other side of developmental coaching, where someone comes forward and says, you know, I want to figure out what I want to do with my life, or I want to be more effective as a leader, as a manager. These would be the individuals where HR would tap them on the shoulder and say, we really want you to work with a coach. And so in many cases, those individuals would be coming forward and saying, well, why do I need this coaching stuff anyway? Who do you think you are that you can tell me or help me to figure this out? So if I can just look at a broad brush stroke as to who those successes would be the individuals that came in not recognizing the impact they had on others. So again, I'll outline a more of a broad kind of individual. They may have been brash or pretty rough. They may have yelled at employees. I can recall one instance. There was a person I worked with, a woman in a telecom, and she used to yell at her staff and, you know, the open cube farms. And so she'd poke her head up and yell at people, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I can't believe you're doing that. Hearing about how some of the individuals would be bully-ish, where they would not terrify their employees, but their employees would say to me afterwards, oh, can you please just help him to be nice to me? Can you help him or her just say thank you occasionally?
Mm-hmm.
And those are instances where, you know, people did take me aside and say, oh, can you just help change this around? Can you help essentially protect us?
Mm-hmm.
So those successes are when I would hold up the mirror and say, do you know what you're doing? Do you know the impact you have on others? When you do this, and you can hear it, my voice changing. When you do this, do you realize that, and then fill in the blank, and making sure it was measurable, observable, specific, and then helping them to decide, do you want to make a change? Do you want to stay the same? Do you want to be a better leader? Do you want to be the kind of leader that people admire and respect? Maybe they're not going to like you 100%. Are they going to admire and respect you? So are you on board or not? So those are the kind of successes that I used to work in. And I don't do that kind of coaching very often anymore because it really is quite exhausting.
Yes. Well, first you have to build the trust and the rapport and get them off their, you know, bad attitude about who are you and, you know, why do you think you can help me? And then all that bad behavior they've been demonstrating. So that was very intense. But I love the way you described it. It's almost like you had a methodology to deal with these folks.
Yes.
And I imagine that it was extraordinarily beneficial, not just to those individual managers and leaders, but to their whole team and the whole company. If you have even one toxic person, can drag down a whole company. It's like a cancer, I say.
Yes, very much so.
Now, tell me, what's your... did you ever work with those individuals that were struggling like that on their self-care? How did that play a factor, if any?
Yes. Let me just go back to working in the outplacement firm. So that was a long time ago, and then I'll bring them some more recent ones.
Okay.
Part of what we would do when organizations were going through the downsizing was make sure that the leaders, knowing that they had to deliver this message of you no longer have your job, that they were taking care of themselves emotionally, physically. So one question I'd ask is, what are you eating and how much sleep are you getting? You know, it sounds like, and I said questions, actually questions. Those are the two. So often I'd hear, well, I'm eating chocolate bars and drinking a soda. I say, well, that is not a way to stay on top of things because, you know, the sugar's just going to, you know, you're going to spin out of control or you're just going to lose energy. Are you sleeping? So I would ask those questions very intentionally and bring it forward. I've worked with very senior people. One individual was the president of an organization the first approximately 6 months of the time that we worked together. And I did work with this person for a long, long time through a number of different coaching initiatives. One of the first activities for this individual was to get down to a desirable weight.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, and you're paying me this kind of money to do that? And the, and the person said, absolutely. If I can't represent myself as an effective leader who's cognizant of how he shows up in the world, i.e. taking care of my body, how can I possibly be a leader that people are going to admire and respect? I thought, wow, great sight.
I love that. Wow. So it's so fascinating. I was just talking to a former client yesterday who's been had a cancer scare, and we were talking about his doctor pushing him on the nutrition. It's just amazing how much nutrition impacts our ability to be healthy and to be sane, I believe.
Yes.
So, like, especially with the sugar and the caffeine. Wow. Well, so what's your ideal client today?
That is an individual who is desirous of being a better leader. So I work exclusively now with leaders, with executives at senior level, with the exception of doing some work, mentor coaching with a college executive coaching. That's a very, very small part of my practice. So going back to looking at the clients I work with, people that are either emerging leaders or individuals who are going to the next level in their leadership development.
Great.
Sometimes there still is that remediation or turnaround coaching. And those have to be the individuals that want to change, as opposed to being told you have to or you're gone.
Sure.
So the leaders that I most enjoy have a tremendous sense of humor. Very smart people with tremendous sense of humor, and we just spend a lot of time laughing.
Love that.
And strategizing and brainstorming, and then I hold up the mirror. You know, I'm constantly holding up the mirror to make sure that people recognize their impact on others. You know, it's such a fundamental part of emotional intelligence. So are you doing things well? Good. Continue. Fine tune. Do more. And then if you're not doing well, then what do you want to do about it? So they have to be motivated and people that are making a difference. It's not just about making money for me. And I don't mean money for me, I mean the money for them. It's just not about making money. Because some of the leaders that we work with as executive coaches, they're bringing in $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year, $1 million or more.
Sure.
Money's not the be-all and end-all. Are they making
right.
a difference as a leader?
Right, right. That is powerful. And I just love what you said about the humor. I haven't articulated that clearly, but I do like to work with people that I can have a lot of laughs, because I just saw something on Facebook this morning from Bill Crosby, and he said you can take any situation, even poverty, and as long as you don't lose your sense of humor, you can move through it powerfully. And I
yes.
just loved that. I love that. We have to be able to laugh every day. Well,
and I just read recently that laughing and humor and singing actually helps to reduce any possibility of dementia.
Oh,
so
really?
It works for us long term. Yes.
Oh,
so it works for us long-term as well.
I just joined a women's choir in January, and I've loved it so much.
Yay.
So
that's
really good. Cool. Yes. Clear out some of the brain fog I've already been experiencing. So let's spend a few minutes about your engagement with the International Coach Federation at all levels. I want to start with the ICF's PRISM Award. I know mm-hmm. that's an award that's given out at the international level as well as the chapter level, and you've had a lot of experience
yes.
with that. So tell us more.
Okay. The PRISM Award, and I'll just give an overview in case people aren't even aware of what that really means. The PRISM Award was launched in Toronto, and I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly how long ago it was, but I believe
it was a long time ago.
A long time ago,
yeah.
yes.
yeah.
And they have continued since that time. There have been some ups and downs in terms of is it going to take place each year or not. So the whole essence of the PRISM Award is to help recognize organizations that are excellent organizations through the power of coaching. And so it's a nomination process. The nomination can be either by the organization or by a coach, an ICF coach. I'm trying to think of all the places that are offering it. Seattle was, and that's where I'd received at one point. Vancouver did, I think it was Joey's Only a couple of years ago. This past year, you'd mentioned that I'd received it with one of my clients, and Banner also received it. And then Banner here in Arizona went on at the national level. So they were nominated or self-nominated for the International PRISM Award. So PRISM can
wow.
be done either at a chapter level or done at an international level. And so Banner Healthcare was one of the organizations that received the award last year in 2012.
In London.
And in London. So what it does is it helps to increase the visibility of coaching, and I think the visibility, the credibility, and the ROI. So because the process, the nomination process, is pretty rigid, and I think rigid is good in this case, it provides the structure for people to follow as opposed to simply going in and saying, well, I'm just going to do some coaching. It means that the organization and or the coach who's working that organization needs to be thoughtful and be future oriented. So they're
yeah.
looking at what they're going to do, what they want to do, what is it they're looking for outcomes, is there going to be a financial impact, is there going to be a qualitative impact in terms of employee satisfaction, reduction in turnover, et cetera. So it's a natural blend with research on investment for coaching and coaches. So with the company that I was working with, Leading Age Arizona, I came in as an external coach, and we had two individuals who are senior leaders in other organizations, and they worked with me as the coaches. So I was, in essence, the coach to the coaches. These people are not ICF certified. They've not gone through formalized coach training. They
sure.
were using a coaching skill, so, manager as coach. In Banner, the difference was that their coaches are internal coaches. So for anyone that's listening who is working with an organization and you think not think, but you see that the company, the organization, the for-profit, the non-profit, you know, large or small, is making great strides. Think about recommending that organization in your chapter for the PRISM Award.
Yeah.
What I did hear last year was a lot of people said, well, I don't know if I should nominate my client or, you know, how do I even go through this? So there was a lot of trepidation. And then afterwards, people were coming to me saying, well, what should I do? How do I do this? So there's information on the ICF website. There's information on the ICF Phoenix website, ICF Global, CoachFederation.com or CoachFederation.org, either one, and finding more information about the whole PRISM process and how to put it in place. So I think it's absolutely marvelous.
Yes, and I'm embarrassed to say I was not aware that Banner had been recognized at the international level.
Mm-hmm.
That's so exciting.
It is.
Yes, so exciting. We might want to get Kathy Bollinger that brought coaching into Banner. We might want to get her as one of our guests on this Blog Talk Radio show.
That would be excellent, yes.
Wouldn't that be great? Yes, mm-hmm. yes, great. Great idea. Now, tell us more about why you value your membership. I don't know, Syl, if we clarified at the beginning. I think I did not, but I know you know this as our chapter president. The whole purpose of our Blog Talk Radio show, sponsored by the Phoenix chapter of ICF, is to promote the profession of coaching, to help people
yes.
understand that there is a profession and there is a body of knowledge and there's a professional association. So say more about why you value the ICF and are involved at such a high level.
If I was completely a lone wolf, and if I didn't know about the ICF, and I didn't know other coaches, I'd be lonely, first of all. So one of the values of ICF is the camaraderie and the networking and knowing other like-minded people. Again, if I was a lone wolf and not part of a larger organization, and I'm talking about ICF, not talking about coaching companies, then there might not be any kind of standardization for what I'm doing. And I wouldn't then be able to grow and develop as a coach, as a profession, as a professional person within the coaching realm. So I see inherently that ICF membership helps people to find others that are like-minded, and whether that is executive coaching, leadership coaching, career coaching, personal coaching, health and wellness coaching, finding all those other people that are working within those different fields, exchanging of information, exchanging of, you know, how to do things easier, how to do things better. And then that standardization underlining all of it, I think is also absolutely important and invaluable. And that's from the coach's perspective. Then from the client's perspective, the clients can come forward knowing that they're working with individuals that have gone through training. They've gone through a program or a process where there is that standard and that expectation that, you know, even talking about the coaching ethics, that the coaches they're working with are ethical, that they're not going to stray into a land that they shouldn't be. So that
right.
provides the professionals, the companies, an assurance that they're getting the best of the best. So I see those as being the benefits on both sides of the board for the coach as well as for the companies.
I love that phrase, the best of the best, and that's what our clients can look forward to if they engage an ICF a credentialed or an ICF member coach. That's so, I love that, the best of the best. Well, Sylva, your sharing here today has been so rich and so extraordinary on so many topics. I'm just so grateful that we've had this time with you and that our listeners have been able to benefit from your wisdom about their niche or coaching these troubled, you know, leaders, bullies, or people that are in a bad space, sharing your methodology for that, and sharing that all that history and background. You know, before there was even a coaching profession, you were coaching, so this has been extraordinarily informative and valuable. I'd just be curious to know if there's anything else that you think our listeners ought to know, given that you've got a platform here of maybe as many as 4,000 coaches.
Yes, I'm going to talk just really quickly about the company that I used to own, Client Compass, and And I'm not going to talk about it as client compass. I'm going to talk about it as finding a business enabler. And what I mean is, with the work that we do, we need to keep track of our hours. We need to keep track of invoicing. We need to keep track of the coaching notes. So having a system or a process to be able to have all of that and make our life easier. Client Compass was a software program. It still exists. It is a software program that helps to reduce the amount of paperwork that coaches do. It's not the only one that's out in the market. There are other ones. One is called Satori. I don't remember the full name of it. And it's a coaching tool, much like Client Compass, Coach's Console, Coach Track. So there are a variety of these programs that are available. When I hear about a coach that says, oh, I'm just going to take all this down by hand and just have file folders, if you've been coaching for a few years, you can't have enough file folders that will fit in enough filing cabinets, whether it's a lateral or a horizontal. There's way too much paper stuff, and it can be challenging trying to remember everything and being able to put one's hands on that information later on. So I really strongly recommend that people take a step back and say, what are the systems and technologies and tools that I need to use? So to be an effective coach and to be able to help my clients. So that if, you know, there's something I can just give to other people that are on this call or that are listening, don't just rely on paper-based means. The world has changed so much that it's so easy to use really good technologies now, and it doesn't have to cost a fortune. So that's my soapbox.
Yeah, no, I love that. So Client Compass is still available even though, you know, John Wiley and Sons bought it.
They bought it, and they put a lot of money into it to take it to the next level, and the difference is it's a desktop residing model as opposed to being in the clouds. Mm-hmm. So it does exist. I'm not sure. I really have no idea how many people are using it. When we had the company, we had a database of about 6,000 people. All those own the program.
Sure.
And so it was the most well-known software program in ICF. We were one of their premier member benefits. There are more programs that exist now. There are many of them. And whether it's, you know, Client Compass or Coach's Console or just using ACT, using something that's a contact manager as well as taking care of appointments, there's a lot of great appointment software so that it makes it easy to interact with our clients and not go back and forth with emails.
Yes. I have used Salesforce for 4 years, and I'm not going to renew my contract next February, and I'm looking at other tools. I used ACK for about 12 years, and but that was in a networked environment here in my small office, and we just got so tired of not being in the cloud. We wanted the convenience of the cloud, so we went to the cloud, but Salesforce is, let's just say I'm not a satisfied customer.
Okay.
And so I'm so happy. I'm so happy for these reminders of these coaching tools. That's great. I've benefited so much. I've got a few announcements to make. Otherwise, I'm going to get fired from my job.
Okay.
our next Blog Talk Radio show, Coach Conversations, will be on Friday, August the 9th at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, with Karen L. Kornblum, PCC. Karen is, her company is called Intuitive Edge Coaching and Learning. So she'll be an extraordinary interviewee, I'm sure. And then we're very pleased on September 13th to have a Pam McLean, PhD, MCC. Pam is the president of the Hudson Institute, one of the most well-respected and long-standing coach training schools. I think the Hudson Institute's been around for decades, way before any of us were calling ourselves coaches. So that'll be great. So we hope our listeners will join us again Friday, August 9th and Friday, September 13th. And before I thank Syl, let me thank Accomplishment Coaching for being our sponsor today. They've done an amazing job. So if you're looking for a great ICF-accredited coach training program run by some of the best certified coaches in the business, look no further than Accomplishment Coaching. Accomplishment Coaching's transformative 12-month program will take you to new heights in your personal, business, and spiritual life, and they'll teach you how to get paid while doing it. Their coaches are highly compensated for their work once they finish training. So whether you're aspiring to enter coaching as a new life phase or you need the support of an accredited coach training program, consider Accomplishment Coaching for your training. For more information, visit accomplishmentcoaching.com. So, Silva, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today, and we so look forward to watching how your career as a senior coach evolves in the future and benefiting from the impact that you'll have on our coaching profession through the ICF, and I'm sure many, many, many rich and beneficial ways in the future, too. So thank you so much for being with us today.
And I want to thank you and acknowledge the two of you, you and Anna, for the work that you're doing with Blog Talk Radio and Coaching Conversations. What you've done is absolutely brilliant, and it's amazing, and I can't thank you enough for all the time and effort and energy the two of you have put in, because are helping to elevate us.
Yes, well, thank you. Anna is our producer, and she does all the heavy lifting. I just get to show up for the fun part, but I would like to acknowledge Joanne Schlosser. She came back from the Fort Worth ICF conference, which I didn't get to attend because of a family challenge, and she shared at our local chapter about Blog Talk Radio and said that we should all be doing Blog Talk Radio to promote our businesses. And I thought, well, we should be using Blog Talk Radio to promote our coaching profession too. And So I went to Deb Exner, who was the president of our chapter at that time, and I said, I'd be willing to do this if we could get Anna to be our producer. And here we are. That was about two and a half, 3 years ago. So we've had a good time. So thank you for that acknowledgement, Syl. And we look forward to staying connected. And Anna, did you want to say something? Okay, thanks so much. And look forward to being all together on August the 9th. Thank you.
Take care, everybody.